Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everybody. It is the Steve Jones Show on a Wednesday. Matt Catrillo here with you. Steve will soon be there in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Great selection of new and pre-owned inventory. And a terrific sales staff that is there for you every step of the way. And all backed up by a great service department that's there for the diagnostics, the inspections, all the routine maintenance, or something that's totally busted with your car. They all got you covered. It's all part of the Sunbury Motors guarantee. And Sunbury Motors to looking for more of those fabulous technicians as well. All at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf. And online at sunburymotors.com. Steve will be back with us in a little bit once he gets back from quarterback club. I'm a little curious of how the tone of that would have been after last week's loss to Ohio State. But we'll get into that in a little bit. But first, we got to start with the Phillies. Boy, man, oh man, that was highly, highly disappointing. But I go back to what Scott Fransky told us yesterday, is the offense was the central issue with the Phillies' struggles in the back part of this series. Ever since the 10-0 win in Game 2, TBS had the stat last night that the Phillies, and it was up to the 6th, 7th inning maybe, I think it was when they put this up, were 7 for 43 with runners in scoring position. And the Phillies at times throughout the season, and even during the postseason, had trouble in that category, especially the lower part of the lineup, which I'll get to in a second. That's not going to win you ball games, especially these type of ball games where clearly from the get-go, this was going the small ball route. Sure, you got a home run from Alec Bohm, but guess what? It was a solo shot. Scott Fransky talked about that with Kyle Schwarber. A lot of his home runs were just solo shots. They weren't multiple run shots. That's what kind of propelled the Phillies a little bit in the postseason and in this series in particular. So if the Phillies just didn't get that production, and they had numerous chances last night. The seventh inning, to me, was the final straw when you got Bryce, when you got the top of the order up with runners at first and second, including Bryce Harper with two outs, and Harper just missed on that fastball. If Harper doesn't miss on that fastball, that's probably a home run, and the Phillies probably win the game. Because that would have made it, that would have been a three-run shot, that would have made it 5-4 at that point. Then there was a couple of when they tied the game in the second inning, after Bohm's home run, end up having the bases loaded with two out. Don't get anybody in. The Phillies were also terrible up and down the lineup, hitting with two outs. And that's something that the Diamondbacks were extraordinary in, especially in these last two games. You have to be able to hit runners in scoring position. You have to be able to get timely hits with two outs in these types of games. And that's what the Diamondbacks did last night and the night before in Game 6. And then the second part of it is also something that Scott Fransky talked about last night. He's absolutely right. The 7, 8, 9 hitters, including Nick Castellanos at 7, did virtually nothing this entire series. Absolutely nothing. you're probably your most productive batter out of the, those three was Brandon Marsh. And no offense to Marsh, that's not saying much. And I put a huge chunk of the blame on Nick Castellanos, because this was a guy that went 0-for-22 after he hit the home run in his first at bat in this series. That can't happen. And we know we've seen him sputter at times, but it looked like he was finally getting it going. And then absolutely squadola, except for his first at bat in game one. 0-for-22. You just can't do that, because if you can't get guys on base, as you saw throughout this series, for your top guys in the Phillies lineup, you're not going to get runs across the board. Rojas, he's a terrific fielder, but the dude cannot hit the bat for his life. I mean, that guy should not be in a major league lineup. I'm sorry. He's a good defensive person to have, good pinch runner. He's got a lot of good speed. But the guy cannot hit the baseball on the major league level. I mean, it was embarrassing at times, I thought. And this is not even my team. Which brings me to my next point about the Phillies and some things that got exposed, especially in these last two games, was the lack of depth they have offensively. They have no bench at all. You have a guy who I haven't even heard of that's you got the game on the line with last night in a pinch hit situation. And then you have another guy that you brought in a pinch hit situation that hasn't really done a whole lot this year that you have to count on. That's got to be addressed by the Phillies this offseason. Because really, those are the pieces I think that they need. If they have those pieces, they're going to be right back where they are next year, if not be better. So I guess that's the only consolation prize to that, even though I know it hurts for a lot of Philly fans today. I hear you. But I think that's really what the Phillies need to do this offseason, is bolster their depth offensively and get a few more bats. So you're not relying on these nobodies in, no offense to them, in the waning moments of your season. And perhaps add another arm to the starting rotation, maybe even to the bullpen. And you have to reconsider the closing situation too, because I don't think Craig Kimbrel really has it. And I never really understood. Now again, I didn't watch every single pitch, every single game of the Phillies regular season, so I'm not going to act like I'm an expert. But just based on this sample size of the postseason that I've seen, so we're talking over 10, 15 games, Jose Alvarado should be the closer for this team going forward. He was the guy that you can rely on the most. Craig Kimbrel did not. He cost you two games. And to me, the other thing that doomed the Phillies in the series was losing Game 4. Losing Game 3 is one thing. You're up 2-0. The Diamondbacks are desperate to try to get a win. And it was a tie game. A tough situation. Okay, they take that one. You have a 5-2 lead in Game 4, and you blow that one? That really hurt the Phillies. That really hurt the Phillies. Because if they win that game, then they win the series. You're not even coming back to Philadelphia. So yeah, this hurts for the Phillies, no doubt. It's definitely, to me at least, everyone's comparing it to, you know, maybe how things happened at 11 with Ryan Howard tearing his Achilles on the final pitch against the Cardinals. I don't know if that necessarily will ever get topped, but I think this is number two. Because this is a really, really disappointing ending to what was still a great run for the Phillies. Let's give credit where credit's due there. This was still a team, couldn't win the division because the Braves ran away with it, but they stuck with it. They got the first wild card and they kept things going. They upset the Braves again. But you had a 2-0 lead in this series. You looked like you had a stranglehold in this series the way the bats just were magnificent, especially in Game 2. And knowing that you kind of, even though you were going on the road, you still had the advantage pitching-wise, and they just couldn't get it done. Just couldn't get it done, and it's definitely very frustrating for the Phillies. But I still think they will be in that spot again next year, but they have to bolster the depth with their hitting. They have to maybe add to that rotation just a little, just to get an extra arm maybe, and they have to figure out the closer situation and make that a consistent spot. That's just my two cents from 30,000 feet. Again, not watching. You may have a different opinion for more of the diehard Philly fans out there. I just jumped on the bandwagon because I wanted to see a local team get into the World Series again. But the Diamondbacks now, I didn't see a whole lot of them this year. Not a lot of America did because, you know, they're not one of the high power classic franchises, at least not currently. They're on the West Coast, so you don't see this team a whole lot. And the one thing we knew about this team is that they had a lot of guts and they weren't afraid in the moment, and they were going to try to grind you out. And they really ramped that up in these last two games. And they gave the Phillies a taste of their own medicine by being how aggressive they were in the Bates Pass with all the stealings that they had. I mean, that was really key last night in a couple of the insurance runs that they got. And you know what? I think Texas is the much better team, in fact. Not just the better team, the much better team on paper than Arizona. I would have even probably favored them over the Phillies, to be honest with you, had the Phillies won last night. But this Arizona team, they got something going, man. They really do. They have that glow about them where nothing's going to stop them, I don't think. That because they're not afraid of the moment, they know how to play small ball, that bullpen is lights out. They have a lot of young guys that are not afraid of the moment, too. That was another part of this series where you thought the Phillies could maybe get to some of these young guys like Fought again last night. He did pretty good. He wasn't fazed, especially after he gave the tying home run up to Bohm. He kept going. Sol Frank out of the bullpen. Guys like that. They got a good young team, and they're gonna continue to be there too, I think, the D-backs. And I think they're going to win this series. I still think it'll be a long series, but I think they're going to win this series in seven. I really do. Because they took care of business at home, winning 2 out of 3 at home against the Phillies. And the ALCS, as we talked about yesterday, the road team won every single game, which is astounding. We haven't seen that. I mean, we saw it recently in the 2019 World Series with the Astros and the Nationals. But still, I mean, that's still astounding to see when a home team doesn't win one game in a series. And I think that's something to keep an eye on, too, with this particular series when you have a fearless team like the D-backs. I really like the makeup of that team. I'm not a huge fan of Tony Lovello, but you know what? He's pushed all the right buttons. And not only that, too, the guys, his whole bullpen has just responded. They have a lot of depth there. So I think that's definitely worked in his favor when he's a guy that likes to push buttons and just ride the analytic numbers. I don't think he had a particularly great series managing himself, but because that bullpen is so solid and deep, that I don't think it necessarily mattered in most cases. But that'll be interesting to see, too, against a good lineup in the Texas Rangers when the World Series begins Friday night in Arlington. But that's just kind of my two cents of what you saw from the Phillies, and especially in these last two games. And that is just, that's brutal. That is a brutal, brutal way to end the season. Up 2-0, stranglehold on this series, and you have the final two games at home, and the bats just do not wake up, especially from your key guys, too. I mean, we talked about Castellanos. I know that the top of the lineup, there was a combined, like, 1-for-28, I think, in these last two games. And each player of that gets a piece of the blame pie. But I'm not going to put as much on Bryce Harper because of what he's done for the team, not only in this postseason, but this entire season. He wasn't particularly great in the NLCS, but obviously he was huge in the wild card and the divisional series. Harper was. didn't have a great NLCS, but you know what? Other guys got to step up too. I mean, Turner was not good in this series. Schwarber was not good in this series, and especially. So I give more of the blame of those guys. Trey Turner was not good either. That's where I put more of the blame. I don't think you can put a whole lot of blame on Bryce Harper. I mean, this guy was the epitome of what a star needs to be. And as Steve and I have talked about before, the guy gets what Philadelphia sports fans want out of him and want out of an athlete. And he gave everything. Even though he did not have a good series, he gave it everything. But that's a tough, tough way for the Phillies to end their season. But this is going to be a very interesting World Series and an improbable World Series. I didn't realize this is you've got two recent 100-loss teams, including the D-backs, who lost 110 games 2 years ago, and now here they both are with a chance to play for a World Series title. It's pretty remarkable, so that should make for a very interesting World Series coming up on Friday, Game 1. So we'll get into that today as well. I've got other rants. Don't you worry, especially my last couple of days here on the show. I will be ready to go each and every day with multiple rants. We'll get ready for that. Steve's coming back from Quarterback Club. We'll get into some Penn State football. James Franklin had some interesting comments in regards to the sign-stealing allegations with Michigan. We'll see if we can play that audio in a little bit, too. A lot more coming up. Your phone calls as well. Steve's always going to take... So if you still got questions, you're still venting, you still need to vent about the loss to Ohio State, do it. We want to hear from you. Philly fans, if you want to vent today, do it. 570-743-9565. At Steve Jones PSU on Twitter. At Steve Jones Show on Facebook. We're here for you. Trust me, we're here for you. Penn State fans, Philly fans, it's been a frustrating week for Pennsylvania sports. I'll give you that much. It is the Steve Jones Show, brought to you by Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Want to work for a stable yet growing company? Got it. Want to work for a family-owned business with over 100 years' experience in taking care of customers and employees? Got it. Want to work for a leader in selling more cars and satisfying more customers? Got it. Who has all that? SMC Sunbury Motor Company is looking for technicians across all their departments. Whether you're an entry-level technician, an experienced technician, or someone looking for a career change, Sunbury Motors would love to hear from you. They're looking for technicians for their quick lane, car and light truck service, heavy truck service, body shop, and frame and alignment division. You can apply online at sunburymotors.com, in person at our North 4th Street location, or call Todd at 570-286-7746. Your new career of working on Fords, Kias, Hyundais, Western Star trucks, plus anything that fits in the door,
and some things that don't.
Join Sunbury Motors. Your new career is waiting for you.
The calming Matt down.
I'm far from done.
I mean, obviously on a roll today.
And that wasn't even my team.
But sometimes you just know. I mean, I know it's hard to. I talked about this with the Texas Rangers going into the playoffs, if you recall. What did I say? Offensively, they're outstanding. One of the best you'll see. I said, but what kept them from winning the division is they had occasional slumps offensively, and that cost them. Philly slumped at the wrong time, and they're a terrific offense.
This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai, best in new inventory with great warranties. great pre-owned inventory with the Sunbury Motors Guarantee and a terrific service department that backs it all up. And it's routine or difficult. They handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, Routes 11 and 15 in Humbles Wharf, and online at sunburymotors.com. So, because I was coming back from quarterback club, your original rant was...
I guess it really wasn't a rant, per se. I was just giving in my two cents of what happened with the Phillies last night and the night before, essentially.
Yeah, I think a lot of it just comes down to timing. And the timing for them is that of all the times to hit a slump offensively, they hit a slump offensively. And they don't have enough. And if you're going bullpen for bullpen, in reality, when you look at the totality of the playoffs, I kind of feel like Arizona had the best bullpen of anybody.
Totally agree.
Better than Houston's bullpen. I mean, better than everybody. They may not have the depth of starting pitching, but when you're sitting there last night and you're watching, you know, they bring in Ginkle, and Ginkle gets five outs. Sewald comes in, gets the last three outs. What they did in the middle of the game, you know, I thought Wheeler did a terrific job, pitched really well. But
not only that, there's a lot of young guys, not only in the bullpen, but in the starting staff that weren't afraid in the moment, and that D-backs team is not going anywhere.
Well, it's interesting because Sewald's in his 30s. Kelly, who pitched game six, he's in his 30s. I mean, they've got a kind of a mix of young guys that have come up through the system to go with a couple of other guys that they acquired that made a big difference.
And Fott was pretty good again last night. Wasn't phased after good. He gave up the Bohm home run either.
No, he was very good. Right? But it's timing means everything. And I know people don't like that explanation, but that's what kept the Texas Rangers from being the division champion. When the playoffs began, I said, watch out for the Texas Rangers, because if their offense gets going, they can beat anybody. That their problem was that down the stretch they slumped a couple of times, and the slumps cost them because they don't have enough, especially in their bullpen, to overcome. You know, and look, Scherzer's just kind of holding on as a starter at this, you know, at this stage. He's most people have rehab starts before they come back, and his rehab start was in the playoffs. So Texas needs its offense to be outstanding. When Texas has lost, they've slumped. Well, the Phillies are in the same boat. Their offense at just the wrong time slumped. And the slump began in Arizona. And it's just the way it is.
I've got Arizona in seven. I said that last half hour, too.
Okay. I think Texas is going to win. I think that the offense does make a difference. I know they'll have home field.
I don't think that's going to matter.
which, by the way, they were 0-3 against Houston.
Exactly.
On the home field. It is not the first World Series ever played in that park, you know.
That's correct, yeah, because it was the bubble in 2020.
Yep, that's where the Dodgers won it. So now, ladies and gentlemen, kids of all ages, from 1 to 102. It's time now for the Matt Cotrillo Scorched Earth Rant of the Day.
Well, I'm going to move to the Philly teams that I actually care about. First, I'm going to start with the Eagles, because I haven't gotten into this yet. And I think it's interesting, is this whole penalty thing with the brotherly shove, because it's happened again last night, and Terry McCauley didn't even get this right. Actually, he did get this right. I'm sorry. There was another thing he didn't get right. But he actually did get this right and called out the officials for being wrong. is, now, of course, in this case, they were offsetting penalties because they called offside on Miami, right. Offside on the Eagles.
Right.
But for the second time, they keep mistaking Jason Kelce, and he said this on his podcast, too, with his brother. He has both of his hands on the ground, one on the football, then one on the ground, because it says it helps him get leverage to fire off the ball. And in the Washington game, and in this game last week against Miami, they mistaked his second hand for Landon Dickerson's hand being offside.
Right.
That's twice now that's happened. I mean, shouldn't the officials be looking back at this and making these corrections? Or is this just another ploy for the NFL to try to get rid of this play? That's where my
yeah.
question is there about that.
Okay. There will be a push to get rid of it. The bottom line is, I watch when Philadelphia runs it. They did it in such a way. They do it in such a way. It's beautiful to watch. We always talk in football about low man wins. It's always been the saying in football, low man wins. You watch that Philadelphia offensive line. They're all lower than anybody else in defense. All of them. They get the leverage right out of the gate. They've got a very strong upper body quarterback in Jalen Hurts. I mean, this is not... I remember doing a Rose Bowl. I think this was the one that was 15 years ago. And Paul McDonald, who had been a quarterback for USC and had been a quarterback for the Cleveland Browns, was in the booth next to us. And Jack Ham made a joke to me and said, he says, you want to know why I lasted 12 years? He says, because that's who I tackled when I played, as opposed to tackling Ben Roethlisberger. Right, which is true. And so a guy like Paul McDonald, different era, of course, would never have the success Jalen Hurts has because of how powerful Hurts happens to be in conjunction with an offensive line that is lower than the defense, really plays it like gophers. Okay. And it's just hard, and then they get the right push from behind. It's the push from behind I'm not enamored with. I never have been, going back to the Reggie Bush, Matt Leinart play.
Right.
I'm not enamored with the push that happens in open field now, because you'll see it happen in open field. To me, that becomes like a line of how dangerous it is. So.
I'm just saying that's just got to be looked at. Because that is legal, too. Jason Kelce's even said it himself.
Yes.
That is legal for the center to have both hands on the ground in that type of situation.
Yeah, and that was the wrong call. I mean, by the officials, they made the wrong call. That was his hand. I think they thought it was the guard's hand.
That's exactly right. They thought second time they thought it was Landon Dickerson's hand.
Right, and it was actually Kelce's hand. And the center is allowed to put his hand on the ground always. Right, that is always just as a balance. If they want to balance themselves, they always can. Right, it's just like an offensive lineman could go with. If they want. Now, offensive linemen don't. They're either in a up stance or with one hand in the ground. They don't put two. But if an offensive lineman wanted to put two in the ground, he could. Well, that's the equivalent when the center does that. He's got one hand on the ball, which is on the ground, the other hand down. That's completely legal.
And the other part of this is what Nick Sirianni said yesterday. He's absolutely right. Is if nobody can do it better than the way that the Eagles can, and if they could, they would do it, and they would do it as often as the Eagles do, because the NFL is and always will be a copycat league.
Yeah, right. No, and you notice it doesn't work for everybody because nobody executes it the same way as Philadelphia does. They don't. They're the best at executing it. And again, it all starts with the offensive line. They are all lower than the defensive guys. Low man wins. So they've already got leverage to start with. For a play that is so simple, it is an incredibly well conceived play. It really is, you know, a very smart, well-conceived play. Did you quit? Hello?
No, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. Because it's not only the offensive line, but it's also Jalen Hurts because he gets low, too. And, of course, he's got the strong lower body.
Yeah.
He's probably he probably is the strongest lower body than anybody else in the NFL. So, really, while, yeah, you do get the leverage with guys pushing him from behind, I would say it's more, it's 70-30 offensive line to Jalen Hurts' execution of getting low than the 30, and that with 70% of that, 30% of the push coming from behind.
But here's the other part that is never talked about. The Eagles do a great job of getting into fourth and one, where, to be honest with you, it really becomes almost a point-blank play. They're not sitting there on fourth and three, and now you have to make a decision, go for it, punt, whatever it may be, because you can't use the push at fourth and three. You can't. It's unrealistic. Even at fourth and maybe two, it becomes like just out of that range, but they do a great job of offensively of getting themselves into a third and one push, fourth and one push, where it becomes a point-blank play for them. So there we go.
No, it's a great point.
No, I mean, it's always the ability to sequence plays and stay on schedule to then set up the best possible scenario for you to convert. The Eagles do that. The Eagles have, now they've had more fourth and threes, more fourth and five or sixes this year than they did last year. It's just the way it's gone to this point. I mean, you know, I mean, to be realistic with you, you do realize Miami's the only win they have over a team over 500 to this point.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, and that's just stating a fact. It's not being critical. I'm not being critical. I'm just stating a fact. It's just the way the league is this year. So.
Yeah. Like I said, the meat of the schedule for the Eagles is coming up. I mean, you got Washington and Dallas before you have the bye. Then you get Kansas City, the big rematch on Monday Night Football. Then you got Buffalo. Then you got Dallas again, San Francisco.
So that
five-game stretch, yeah, we'll find out a lot more about the Eagles.
I mean, there's more to come. And look, the Eagles will be the standard for each. One thing the Eagles do understand, and they get it, and especially after what they did last year, is they're the biggest game on everybody's schedule. San Francisco, they'll be the biggest game. Dallas, they'll be the biggest game. Conversely, San Francisco and Dallas know how they feel. Because guess what? Every time they play someplace, they're the biggest game in that team's schedule. Right? But that is something where you know you're going to get the best from the team you're facing because of who you are. And the Eagles just keep winning. They keep winning. And that's to their credit. They've done a good job with it. I don't have a problem. You know, some people have had a problem with Nick Sirianni being very emotional after wins. I don't. Winning's hard.
Yeah, that I'm okay with too. I think Nick Sirianni is a very good coach. He's a great leader. I'll put him in when we do our good, very good, great category. I put him very good coach, great leader. It's just I just think sometimes that he lets his cockiness and frustration into some of his decision-making, and sometimes it's over-aggressive. That's what I think keeps him from being, like, a great coach.
Yeah.
Now, maybe if the Eagles win the Super Bowl this year or at some point in his tenure, then maybe he elevates himself into that category. But that's just how I feel about it. I think he's a terrific coach. I really do.
No,
the guys love him. The guys play for him. They respect him. They bought into his mentality. What I like about him is how much he focuses on putting guys in the right position to be successful, and just the simple things about the game, like the fundamentals, like how he coaches that all the time, and he has the key words in the NovaCare. I mean, because that's really what it is. And I love that about him. I really do.
But he also has good personnel. There are other people that are doing the same things that he's doing, but if you don't have the personnel to pull it off, you're not going to be what are they 6-1?
6-1, and they just picked up Kevin Byard from Tennessee yesterday, too. Another big move by Howie to bolster up the defense in the secondary.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, that's another one we'll see. I mean, you have to ask yourself why Tennessee got rid of him. Right?
I think to a point because it looks like they're more just trying to turn the page and go younger, it looks like, but at the same I can kind of see that too.
No, I always say that. Okay, like why did they, you know, is it a salary dump? Is it a youth dump? Is it a cap dump? Or is it we see diminishing skills dump? You know what I mean? So you ask yourself, or is this the best return I can get for the future of the franchise? Right? So, you know, those are all things you do have to ask. And we'll find out. We'll find out. He may fit in perfectly and be exactly what they needed. So that's one of your complaints about your teams. It sounds like you have multiple ones.
That's correct. I do have another one with another Philadelphia team.
Oh, Jesus, this is going to be a long show.
You only have two more shows after today to put up with me.
Oh, it's going to be a long show. why don't you start the job tomorrow?
I mean, I can call over there and ask, but I think it's pretty much set in stone.
No, I'm pretty much upset to lose you, so how about that? All right. So since I'm upset to lose you, I'm not going to lose you sooner than I have to. How about that?
That works for me. Appreciate it.
All right. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Everyone's got a sick feeling in their stomach. You know, it's not the way that we pictured this thing ending, but, you know, it's a lot of things to look back on, but, you know, I'm sure this isn't going to sit right with a lot of guys, and, you know, we're going to have to, you know, make sure that we do everything in our power in this offseason and, you know, to make sure that we come out. We know it's going to be a challenging, tough year going into next year, but, you know, try to envision ourselves getting back to this spot and making sure that doesn't happen.
It's hard when you go through 162 games and then you play 13 postseason games. So you play 175 games and it ends like that on your field. For the second consecutive year, it ended on your field, as a matter of fact. And that part hurts. I mean, the pitching was decent enough last night. I mean, they gave up 11 hits. And what struck me was, and let's go back to what the question I asked Scott Fransky yesterday. Corbin Carroll in game one leads off game one with a broken bat single to right center field. 54 stolen bases in 59 attempts. Doesn't move. Like, jeez. Do you want to set the tone here? This is who you are? Game two. Grounded to short. Trey Turner is charged with an error. Carroll beats it out. I'm like, okay, all right. After last night, they're going to change up now. Nope. Did not. And you're like, wow. They actually, you know, I talk about the crowd doesn't intimidate you and so forth. They acted intimidated. Like, you know, like afraid. Like, what are we doing here? It made no sense to me. Well, now you watch the last two games. They got on base, and Carroll had no problem. He took off. They were aggressive. They just let it all hang out. And the Phillies had trouble stopping them. They had trouble stopping him because they changed their mindset and their aggressiveness and went with what works for them. Instead of being afraid to make an out, they were aggressive. The Phillies, meanwhile, offensively hit a slump. That big one, of course, was the bases loaded. What was it, seventh inning? That was the big one. Could not get a run across, and they had golden opportunities. crushing. That's just awfully hard for any Phillies fan. As a Red Sox fan who's sitting here on what is today the 37th anniversary of the ball going through Bill Buckner's legs. As I've told the story many times, I have not. The only half inning I saw was the bottom half of the 10th inning because I was coming back from Alabama. Penn State had one of the great wins ever. Beat Alabama. Penn State was number 5 undefeated. Alabama was number 2 undefeated. Penn State won the game 23-3 in Tuscaloosa. So we had to fly back into Harrisburg, and I bussed back up to State College. So the only thing I saw was the bottom of the 10th inning, and I didn't see it in my house. It was in the radio station I was working for at the time because I had to take the post-game show equipment and put it back. So I watched it on the TV set in the newsroom and went, oh, you've got to be kidding me. Really? So, Philly fans, I know how you feel. I survived Bucky Dent. I survived a tough play on Bill Buckner, who was a great player for the Red Sox. You will survive this as well.